last week of March.
I mean, I could be like total sports bro here and say like March Madness was pretty fun, you know, kind of happened or whatever. But Grant, here's the reality. You know what's been the most exciting thing to happen to me the last couple weeks? Dude, the XFL has been awesome. It is like unequivocally been like a very good on-field football product. And I have no idea why I've loved it so much. But it has been one of the most, it has just been an off-season gift. It has been incredible.
Who do you have a team? Are you a St. Louis Battlehawks man? Or
I am inclined to root for the St. Louis Battlehawks.
Sure.
Which is unfortunate because I also really like Seattle and they're kind of rivals because they're playing for that last playoff spot. But my attitude has been there are no villains in the XFL. I'm rooting for everyone.
Sure.
I just am enjoying watching the football. It has been very, very, very fun.
I love that for you. I'm a Renegades man on Twitter, but I don't watch the games, so I can't.
Dude, Bob Stoops, can I just say this? I think I can say this. Bob Stoops looks terrible. What the hell is he doing coaching a DFW team and standing on the side? He's like, what itch is him yelling at Drew Plitt, scratching, that special assistant to Brent Venables wouldn't scratch? I don't understand it.
Counterpoint. What itch just... $400,000 a year scratch or whatever is getting paid.
There is no way he is making that much money.
Are you Googling this? Because I don't know what the salary of an XFL head coach is.
Holy shit. It is five. We're leaving that in. Sorry. Sorry. It is 500,000.
Yeah, man.
What?
Yep.
Golly. I pursued the wrong profession, man. I pursued the wrong profession. I could have been an XFL coach.
Couldn't we all? Parker, this is the point where we have a really important announcement to make. Delayed, but important. Purple Theory Podcast is now under the auspices of the Dave Campbell's Texas Football Network, specifically the Republic of Football Network. I grew up in Texas. I always bought every single Dave Campbell football magazine that I could get my hands on. My parents would mail me DCTFs when I lived in Fort Worth as presents. So it is really an honor for me to join the network of people like Ishmael Johnson, Greg Tepper, the amount Mike of people Craven. That Shahan, who I don't like him necessarily, but yes, Mike Craven,
an enemy of the podcast,
enemy of the Shahan podcast, Shahan. But the amount of journalists that currently work for and have worked for Dave Campbell is unbelievable. And so we are very happy to join the DCTF and the Republic of Texas podcast network to cover the Big 12 at large.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say, Grant, like I, self promo. I went on the Solid Verbal this week. I wrote for the Athlon magazine last year. And those two were like, wow, this is awesome. I've like read this thing and now I get to be a part of it. And I feel every bit the same about Dave Campbell having, it was a little rocky there for us for a little bit. I don't know if we were going to like keep podcasting or what. It's like, okay, let's pivot to the Big 12. Let's talk about it. And as soon as we kind of pivoted to the Big 12, Craven was in the DMs and saying, hey, we want you guys. And so we're really fortunate to have a landing spot there. And we're really fortunate to potentially, talk more about the Texas teams and about the Big 12 and kind of expand our focus. And I think I say this every podcast episode, but like our previews of non-TCU teams have historically been our best episodes. And I'm excited for every episode to kind of become that kind of episode. So pretty fun and a fun group of, ragamuffins over there that are kind of assembling. There's a little bit of something for everybody. And we're excited to kind of be, I'll give our title of roving correspondents for the Big 12 for Dave Campbell's Texas football.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. And so we are really, like you said, excited to expand our coverage and just kind of hop into what we're good at, which is previewing Big 12 teams, because I think we do that better than it. I'll brag. I'm not afraid of it. I think we do that better than almost anybody. Yeah, probably.
If somebody does a better Kansas preview than me, I don't want to meet them because they're probably freaking nerd.
I know a lot. I don't know these people, but I relied on a lot of reporters in Kansas that are good people. But holistically, I think you do a pretty good job. So excited to join the Republic of Texas. With that said, I don't give a damn about spring games. And I know you don't as well.
The golden rule, Grant, the golden rule of spring games, right? If your offense looks good, it's because your defense is bad. If your defense is good, looks good, it's because your offense is bad. There's no winning in a spring game. Any inference you try to make out of a spring game is a tale of sound and fury told by an idiot signifying nothing.
But Parker, my four-star recruit cornerback picked off my my quarterback in the second quarter.
Jim Thorpe Award. It's happening. Okay. I don't even think we've talked about this offline. We're doing this live right here. I'm sending this to you on Twitter. Did you see Oklahoma's scoring system for their,
no, I did game? Not. So it's going to be great.
It is absurd. I'm sure you're pulling this up. I'll narrate through this. A very like, I would say 2008 graphic here.
For sure.
From Oklahoma football, a lot of drop shadow and then kind of this weird, I presume that's like the leather of a football behind
this
it.
This is some NBA 2K6 with Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah.
This is, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. But so the scoring system, I'm just going to read through these and we'll just talk about them. Okay, the offense, that's the red team. A touchdown is 6 points. I agree. That's fine. Field goal is 3 points. A punt is 2 points. A two-point conversion, 2 points. Non-controversial there. An extra point, 1 point. I agree. Turnover on down, 0. Missed field goal, 0. Turnover, 0. 2 points for a punt is something I would do if I was terrified that my offense was going to look terrible and I needed a way to give the fans excited.
So as bad as this is, I have some more qualms on the defense.
The defense is objectively weirder. Okay. Defensive touchdown, 12 points. A defensive turnover, 7 points. Fourth down stop, 7 points. Missed field goal, 7 points. A punt is 5 points. So a punt is net 3 points for the defense.
I just want to make this clear. A missed field goal is 7 points. I want to get that on the register.
Okay, I like that because a made field goal is 4 points. And you know my feelings about field goals. You kick a field goal, you're a loser. The defense is profiting.
A thing that the defense has no control over is 7 points.
Sack is 3 points. Okay. A pass breakup is 2 points. A missed
way
extra
too many
point
points. That's
is 2 points.
Right.
And a missed 2 point conversion is 2 points.
A pass breakup being worth 2 points is insane.
I honestly, that feels less objectionable than a missed extra point being worth 2 points. This is patently absurd. So there's a couple possibilities here, right? One
is that Vanderbilt is on drugs. Yes. And then what's the other? Yes.
Okay. So there's four possibilities. One, just narcotics being consumed at the Oklahoma facility. I'm not going to comment on that either way. I think, remember last year, there was a lot of, I'll use a technical term. There was kind of a pissing match about spring game attendance and Oklahoma was kind of at the center of it. It's very annoying. So perhaps one possibility is that they don't have enough engagement in the spring game and they're trying to like give out scorecards to kids and like have them be more engaged in the game. Another possibility is that they're very worried about the offense and the offense is going to go 3 and out 3 times. And they're going to say, you know what? That was 6 points, 2 points per drive. That's not bad. And so they're spinning that. The flip side is the other way around is that how can we I'm going to quote a tweet from Ian Boyd. How can we avoid this game looking like an abject disaster for our defense? And that's kind of the other possibility is like, they're very clearly insecure about one side of the ball and desperately trying to cover it up with the spring game scoring.
Kirk Ferentz is looking at this scoring system and thinking, why can we not implement this?
And saying it's not enough on the defensive side. Missed field goal, yes, 10-point swing right there.
Baby. Punt 2 points. I think Iowa would have been 9-3 last year.
I can't do this live on the air, but if someone who's listening, an adept listener, do this for me. If Iowa got 2 points for a punt and didn't score otherwise, would they have a higher points per game than they did in 2022? I bet it's close. It's close.
It would be close. Parker, this episode is mostly functioning as an introduction to, hey, our new partnership with the DCTF and joining the Republic of Texas Football Network. But we do have a agenda for maybe the first time in months.
We're what, 10 minutes in and we're finally talking about what this podcast episode's about?
It's incredible. We have compiled a lot of stats about home and away in the Big 12, the new Big 12 with Cincy, UCF, BYU, and Houston. So what I have is the raw stats, home and away, win-loss records for the last 5 years. You, I believe, have against the spread. Is that correct?
Yeah. So quick, can I zoom back just for a second?
Sure, please. Yeah.
Last time we podcasted, we did head coach rankings.
Yes.
And unlike a lot of offseason content, we tried to not do them in a hot take manner that was, hey, here's the ranking of the coaches. Let me tweet out a graphic and then you guys kind of, you know, hate engage this or whatever.
Yeah, big
what we're
game
trying
part.
To do is we're trying to, I hate you. we're trying to formalize our thought process a little bit more as we more systematically cover all of Big 12 teams. And we're doing it in a way that you can follow along. You, the listener, can make your own power ratings and beat us. Like, that's great. That would be good. We would learn about the game. But we're trying to put pen to paper here and rank teams and coaches in a way that is more informative as to our expectations for what's on the field and helps us kind of, you know, systematically go through every team. So we ranked coaches and we did that 0 to 15. And we kind of said, you know, here's why their strengths, weaknesses,
14,
whatever.
Unless I missed a team.
Well, but we gave them 0 out of 15 points contribution.
Okay. Sorry.
Right. So we power rated them. And then we said, here's how many points I think this coaching staff contributes to this team. And we're going to do that for each team with their, you know, their every unit. But some of these general things we thought we'd tackle in the offseason. So we're going to look at home field advantage because a lot of times a Vegas book will use 2.5 points in college football as a standard home field advantage. Grant and I tend to believe that's a little more heterogeneous. I think there's some movement there. So we're not necessarily going to affix a certain point value, but we are going to ordinally rank teams in terms of their home field advantage and talk about why that might matter, why it won't matter. And again, this just helps us with our power rating that we're going to update every week through the season. And hopefully you'll update every week and tweet us and compare as well. So this week we're going to talk, you know, we've got stats about home and away. We've got stats about against the spread and all that. And we're just going to kind of talk about what does home field advantage mean? Why is it important? And then what is the specific home field advantage? What might factor into that, into the Big 12, and then give a little bit of an ordinal ranking there. I think, Grant, we didn't talk about this off air. It'll probably be a little looser than our coach rating last time. We were very technical of our rankings. We'll just kind of talk through these, but
I think it's kind of a mix in that we have harder stats this time around, but I think our home field advantage rankings will be kind of a little bit more subjective, maybe even with the hard stats. But I'm excited to hear what you have to say.
I as well am excited. I feel like because we've had to postpone a couple weeks, we've talked about this actually probably a little bit more than our median episode, just in terms of, hey, what are you thinking? What are you doing? And so I'm excited about this.
Yeah. So let's go alphabetical in terms of, okay, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to give you the raw stats in alphabetical order, and then you're going to give me their against the spread kind of better, worse, whatever. And we'll plug that in. I also have some stats about airport mileage, which I'm really excited to provide you and to the rest of you that listen to this podcast. And then at the end, we'll kind of rank them top to bottom, home field advantage, best to worst.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll kind of like talk about the different components of what might go into home field advantage.
Yeah.
And then
also teams.
Again, have we talked about how if we spent 15 minutes on Sunday night, our preparation for this podcast would be so much better. But I think the quality of this podcast would be so much worse.
This has been 2 weeks in the making, but also some teams are just like dog shit on the road. So it's kind of really hard to evaluate how good they are at home versus just being really bad road teams. And also, it's hard to identify a problem. Yeah. And also, we have experience going to these stadiums, experiencing them, and watching games. So we can make our rankings here. But so what I have, going alphabetically, the Baylor Bears, Parker. Okay. Over the last 5 years, they're 22-8 at home. They're 13-14 on the road, which suggests a pretty good home field advantage in Waco.
I have them as I did conference play only, just to try and level out the competition a little bit. I have Baylor at 6.39 points, positive point differential at home since 2013, since the new Big 12. And 1.98 point differential on the road for a 4.41 home field, quote unquote, advantage, which ranks 11th out of 14 Big 12 teams.
Okay. I also think Baylor played BYU. Or
they did twice.
Wrong. Yeah, yeah.
Or so, once, because that was part of the Jeff Grimes deal. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
The other thing I looked at, if I can co-opt this and explain my methodology and like ranking the teams, because I won't give away my ranks totally. But my thought is that the point differential doesn't exactly represent home field advantage well because quality of competition fluctuates. I think the two things that are important to evaluate home field advantage are, one, you're just straight up record as a home dog. If you have home field advantage, when you're an underdog at home, you're winning games more often than everybody else, right? So I think that's important. And then two, I think that I want to look at your against the spread numbers against the spread numbers as a home favorite. So it's like when you were a dog, did you actually win? And then when you were a favorite, did you actually take care of business? And that's what I think is super important in terms of kind of how well you did or like how good your home field advantage is, right? So Baylor at home as a home dog, they've been a home dog 14 times since 2013 in conference play, 0.286 winning percentage there. That's not great. That ranks, I don't have this ranked. I don't have this sorted by, hold on. I have to have this sorted by percentage. That ranks 286. That's seventh. So they are, what is that? 11th in point differential between home and away. And they are seventh in winning percentage as a home dog. And so there's a slight advantage, but I think they're actually closer to middle of the pack with the home field advantage.
Okay. So remind me again, that's from what year? Since the new
Big 12. So 2013.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. And BYU is going to be inflated because they're independent. And so I'm going to count all their games, which means, you know, Dixie State or whatever.
Yeah.
But then Houston, UCF, and Cincy, I'm going to count only their American games.
Gotcha. Okay. So just again, to clarify for listeners, I'm giving you raw win loss since 2000. 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, the last 5 years. Parker has it back to the original Big 12, and he has access to more than I do. But so Baylor, not outstanding, middle of the pack, BYU, 23-8 at home, 16-10 on the road since 2017. Provo does not seem like a fun place to play. I'll tell you that.
No, the big deal is elevation, obviously, is going to matter. They're at 4,500 feet. The rest of the Big 12 conservatively is about, 300 feet, maybe, depending on where you are. And so certainly that's going to matter, because acclimation time in a football game, you're getting there on Friday, you're playing on Saturday, is going to be really hard to do. I bet for weeknight games, that number is a little bit better. Grant, have you ever like gone to elevation? You did for your, I don't know if I'm telling
state. Yeah, bachelor party. Here. Yeah. I was in a,
for your bachelor party.
Utah. Yeah. Not my bachelor party. Utah. Someone else's. Yeah.
It's noticeable, man. It'll freaking sure get you.
Yeah. I was hauling a suitcase up a flight of stairs and did not like it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you one of the, and I'm interested in their road kind of, I bet they are a little bit better of a road team, because I don't know. Like I live at elevation now. I lived at elevation for a couple of years when my then girlfriend, now wife, was living in Fort Worth, and I like came back for Thanksgiving and we ran a 5K and I beat my 5K time by like 4 minutes, which is just absolutely absurd because it was just so much easier at a flat level. Right. And so BYU has a little bit of that going on for them. Their win percentage is,
did you bring that entire thing up to just brag about your 5K at the Fort Worth Turkey Trot?
No, if I was trying to impress people, I'd tell you what my bench press was right now, but I'm not going to do that. So BYU, I'm just saying, it's, you have a performance advantage coming. So one, you have an advantage.
You do.
Because your opponents have a disadvantage. You have an opponent, you have advantage going in. So you get it. Okay, BYU, second in win percentage as a home dog. They've been a home dog 13 times since 2013. 46.2% is their home dog win percentage. Their point differential, sorry, that is, that 46.2 is second in the new Big 12. Mm-hmm. Their point differential, they are 12.4 points at home, 2.14 points above their opponent on the road. So that's a difference of 10.3 points. That's third in the new Big 12 since 2013. So definitely a strong advantage there. And then in terms of against the spread, points against the spread, they are first overall. Again, that's going to be inflated just because they played some really bad teams.
Well, they did. And also,
And
Brocco Mendenhall, when he was there, kind of cultivated a, listen, they may beat us, but we're going to bite their knees and make it close.
They're BYU under Brocco Mendenhall was very annoying. Absolutely.
Extremely annoying. University of Central Florida, 28-4 at home over the last 5 years, 16-10 on the road. So raw data, five games better than BYU, but I believe BYU played a neutral site game during that time span. So that's a game that will come into play later when we talk about Oklahoma and Texas. And also Baylor and Texas Tech, but
the old butt game back in the day. UCF 10.6 point differential at home, positive 2.89 point differential on the road. That's 7.71 net points. They're fifth in the new Big 12 there. And then in terms of winning percentage as a home dog, oof. UCF has been a home dog four times. This speaks to their quality of competition. They've been a home dog. This cannot be right. Since 2013, I have them only four times as a home dog.
Ooh.
Can you vamp for a second for me?
Yeah, I can. I mean, I can kind of imagine it just in terms of the quality of competition in terms of UCF.
They went 0-16.
What?
0-12. Sorry, 0-13. I was thinking about NFL. I've been doing too much
home
NFL
dogs stuff.
No, I'm saying in a season. There's no way that they're.
Oh, yeah. No, they went 0-1. Yeah, they didn't win a game, man.
Central Florida, this has them at 7. Something's amiss.
Yeah, Scott Frost.
Something is amiss.
Is a interesting person.
Okay, so they are. I have them at 42. 42.9 win percentage, which is going to put them at seventh. This might be, I might have something wrong in my code here.
Well,
can you vamp for a second?
Yeah, no, I can. I can move on to Cincinnati, which I know is true, or we can talk about UCF more. It's really up to you, buddy.
Well,
we can talk about how I think George O'Leary faked a resume and got a job at Notre Dame. We could talk about that more.
That was certainly something that happened. I think I'm just going to throw out this might be only games that they had a spread on because UCF was so bad. I can't filter this college football. I can't filter team rankings for the Big 12. So I'm kind of caught with my pants down here.
That's an image.
Because this does not look correct. So I'm going to stick to win percentage and I'm going to stick to point differential. And we're just going to go with that. That's great.
So Cincinnati is the best at home among the new and the old Big 12. Cincinnati over the last 5 years, Parker, this will shock you. 31-1. Nippert Stadium is a fortress. 19-7 on the road for the record. Now, of course, that coincides with Cincinnati's rise to a power player in the G5, and playing in the AAC. But 31-1 is nothing to sneeze at.
No, it's not. But if you look at them as a home dog, only 33% cover as a. So that, oh, okay. I understand what I'm looking at. Okay. Well, also, okay.
Go ahead.
This website, this team rankings is against the spread, and I'm looking at straight up. Okay. So I feel better about my data now. I'm good. UCF 0 as a home dog, Cincinnati 20% win percentage, 0.200 as a home dog. So when they have played better competition at home, they have not beaten them at a very high clip. That's 10th in the new Big 12.
And again, reminding our listeners, Parker has data at 2013. I have it since 2017. So in the Fickell era, they have succeeded. Scott Satterfield is now the head coach at Cincinnati, and well, he's at the bottom of our rankings. So
we'll see how that goes. Well, and just to say, it's not like when they've been a favorite at home, they win, but as an underdog, they've been very bad. So in terms of home field advantage, I don't feel like they're particularly getting any kind of bump, if you will.
Yeah. The Houston Cougars, was it TDECU Stadium, I believe?
I didn't say Cincinnati's record out because I got flustered there because I thought my data was wrong. So Cincinnati, 10.5 points per game as a home, at home versus conference play, 2.84 point margin. That's 7.66 positive point margin, home versus away. That's sixth in the new Big 12.
Okay. Houston is 16-10 at home in the last 5 years, 17-11 on the road. Because we have just joined Dave Campbell's Texas Football and the Republic of Texas Football Network, I will not give my entire thoughts about the fan base of the Houston Cougars. But I will say that this brings me a lot of joy. And that's it. What are your stats?
I have to say, that's totally unexplored for me. Maybe that's something we talk more about the Houston preview. Yeah, I don't even know what the stereotype of a Houston fan is.
What are the stats, Parker?
The stats are not good. Houston, positive 6.98 points per game at home, 5.88 points per game on the road. That's a home field advantage margin of 1.110 points per game. Grant, that is 14th in the Big 12. Also, if you look at their win percentage as a home dog, they've been a home dog 8 times. They are 12.5% when winning there. So they rank last as well.
Love to hear that. I am doing the Birdman hand gif here for Iowa State. 24-9 at home in the friendly confines of Ames, Iowa. They are 10-15 on the road in the last 5 years. The defense rests.
You don't just walk into Ames, man. You don't just walk into Jack Trice expecting to win.
But you welcome the people from Ames into wherever you are.
Yeah, no, love to have them on the road. You wonder about their opposing locker room facilities. I remember TCU played at Purdue, and remember there was like, hey, this is a tent that's like on the side of the road. Maybe Iowa State's got a similar situation.
Yeah, but that can't happen 15 times over the last 5 years. So
look, it can. Iowa State 5.37. positive point differential on at home, minus 7.87 point differential. So in the negative for the first time of all the teams we've talked about on the road in conference play. That's a home field point differential advantage of 13.2. Grant, that is best in the Big 12 by almost a field goal, which is pretty dang impressive. Their home road splits. If you look at their straight up dog, home dog win percentage, it's 20. Excuse me. Let me sort this correctly. So I read this right. 20.8, which is only ninth. I would file that in annoying, but they're not necessarily winning at a high clip. So ninth in the Big 12, 20.8%. They'll upset a couple people. They'll keep games close. They'll make people uncomfortable, but it's not like in that time period since 2013, they've won at a high clip at home relative to what you'd expect.
Yeah, it's mostly just, and I don't mean to cast aspersions, but it's mostly just Matt Campbell may not be as good as you think that he is. To the listener, Kansas is,
but he's as good once as you ever thought he was.
I said, Dave, Kansas is 9-20 at home, 5-23 on the road. We don't need to pick on Kansas. What
a terrible song. I can't get over it. Yes, we can talk about Kansas.
I love think about Toby the song. Keith.
I do too, but he's highly problematic. I think we can say
yes. No,
Toby Keith has some red flags.
All right. Yes, he does. Kansas, whatever. Kansas State is 21-12 at home and 11-13 over the last 5 years. I expect that winning percentage to climb because Chris Klieman is Chris Klieman.
Wait, are we doing Kansas or Kansas State? I was confused.
I skipped Kansas. I'll be honest with you. That we can throw that data out because a lot of that is pre Lance Leipold, and I don't think we're going to get meaningful data out of it.
Okay, mine paints them kind of in a positive light, honestly.
Okay, go ahead, please.
Kansas minus 20.4. differential at home, minus 25.4 differential on the road. That's a positive 5.04 point differential. That is 10th in the new Big 12. Grant, that's better than Baylor. Their home field advantage is better than Baylor's stadium. And then if you look at their home dog win percentage, it is 14%. They've been a home dog 43 times, which almost doubles up the next highest, Texas Tech. Number of home dogs since 2013 in conference play. They're 14%. Grant, that's 11th. So better home field advantage in terms of winning games that you shouldn't than Houston, Oklahoma, and UCF.
Okay.
You don't just walk into the Sunflower State and you just don't walk into Sunflower State and expect to win.
Kansas State 21-12 at home, 11-13 on the road in the last 5 years. Which,
not bad.
Yeah, I believe.
Kansas State ranks third in, eighth in home field advantage. So 4.96 points at home, positive differential, negative 0.42 on the road. So close on the road, but that's a 5.38 home field advantage. That's eighth overall. And then in terms of win percentage, as a home dog, They are fourth, 31.6% home dog win percentage. They've been a home dog 19 times since 2013.
Very nice. In the last 5 years, the Oklahoma Sooners, 28-3 in Norman. Pretty daggum good. 14-7 on the road. Again, they play a neutral game every year against Texas, but not a surprise. A, that is both Oklahoma's a perennially a very good team, and B, people are insane in Norman, and so that helps.
It is hard to, so this is hard to identify because Oklahoma is positive 14.2 points per game at home, which is best in the Big 12 by a lot. And then on the road, they are positive 10.0 points per game,
right,
which is best in the Big 12 by a lot.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
that only is a 4.19 margin, which ranks them 12th in the Big 12 in terms of point margin. Oklahoma has been a home dog exactly one time, and they lost that game 0-1, 0% win probability.
What? All right, what was it? Win percentage. You know?
I have to look it up.
I'll vamp.
Yeah, just give me 2 seconds.
I'll vamp in that time in there. To provide, if any Oklahoma fan is listening to this, to provide you some comfort, that Oklahoma State has the second largest margin, maybe the first largest margin between home and away splits, which is very fun. Oklahoma State 26-6 at home in the last 5 years, 13-13 exactly on the road. I've always had a good time in Stillwater, so I'm not going to poop on it. But
I like Stillwater. I think everyone was nice. They were like, "Hey, welcome to Stillwater. Have a beer." They inspired me to be a better fan.
I really hate Oklahoma State's fight song. I really do. It's the only marching band song I've heard that is condescending.
I'm gonna sound like a bad fan, but I can't even.
Well, I'll do it, but I'll save our new listeners. Yeah.
I'm playing it because I'm so
ADHD. I can recreate it for you.
Just give me a second.
Well, this is really fun for everyone on the other end.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm there. Okay. It's good. I just need a taste to get there.
It's plodding. I don't like it. What?
Yeah.
Have you found the Oklahoma game?
Yeah, disappointing. It's one of the big. It's the 2022 Red River rivalry where Texas was favored. So that's
how'd that go?
Yeah, not great. So a little bit disappointing there in terms of. So Oklahoma is basically 0-0. They haven't been a home dog during that stretch. I don't know why they would be a home dog. Oklahoma State, on the other hand, has been a home dog 9 times in that stretch. Grant, they have won 77.8% of those games. You don't walk into Stillwater expecting a win. Look, past performance is not indicative of future success, all right? You got to separate that out. Oklahoma State, so that's first in the Big 12 by a whole lot, obviously. 7.2 points per game at home, 1.73 positive margin on the road. That's 5.47. That is good enough for seventh in the Big 12. Stillwater's a hard place to win. Hard place to win.
It really is. It's a great home field advantage. Texas is 22-8 at home over the last 5 years, 10-10 on the road, which is really funny. Neutral site games against Oklahoma, of course. I think they've also played some other ones. So BYU, I think. No, that would have been before 2017 in the stats that I have, but a loss. I think it was a Tyrone Swoops era.
Which is very funny.
Okay.
Yeah. Swoops, there it is, man. Swoops, there it is.
I was passed out on a dorm room in College Station, Texas when that game was occurring.
Tight.
That's just a fun fact.
The University of Texas Fighting Longhorns, 31.2 percentage. Winning percentage as a home dog. That's 16 games since 2013. That's fifth, actually, which is pretty good for Texas. But if you look at their margin, 3.96 points per game at home, 1.24 points per game margin away. That's 2.72. That ranks 13th. Not a strong home field advantage from Texas. Does not feel, I mean, they lost to Kansas. Does not feel like they have a lot of mojo when it comes to coming to Austin. Teams aren't as scared as that anymore.
You could have just ended that as they lost to Kansas and it would have been okay. TCU, the Horned Frogs are 20-11 at home and 14-12 on the road, which really is surprising. I think a lot of that is bolstered by last year.
I was going to say, surprising in what direction?
Well, it seems too high is what I meant, but especially over the last 5 years. But yes, take that with a grain of salt because TCU won every game last year, but winning records in both directions. So,
yeah, TCU 8.77 point differential at home. That is, I believe, fifth in the Big 12. And then negative 1.75 on the road. So they have a 10.5 point home field advantage. That's second in the Big 12 since 2013. Okay. And then in terms of being a home dog and winning, 41.7%, which 12 games where they were a home dog, they are third in the Big 12 since.
Okay.
I think what I'm learning is that like decent teams are not home dogs often in the Big 12, which is something like I intuitively know, but it's interesting to see.
Yeah. Learning that. And then also that like the, I guess the student section at TCU outweighs the rich folks in DFW that show up halfway through. That's neither here nor there. Texas Tech. Fun fact, Parker.
I think it's a philosophical question about what influences. Well, let's circle back. I'm going to write that down. What influences home field advantage before we show our ranking? Okay.
Texas Tech. 19. I love this. 19-13 at home over the last 5 years. Hell yeah. 6-18 on the road. Holy hell.
My God. Imagine losing to Texas Tech on the road. TCU's done that twice, I think.
Oklahoma State's done that. I think Texas has done that. I think Oklahoma.
Jet Duffy. Good Lord. What a complicated individual. No comment. Let's move off that.
So that's Texas Tech.
Let's see. They are negative 2.47 points at home. Negative 7.8 on the road for a positive 5.33 home field advantage. That is ninth in the Big 12. As a home dog, Texas Tech has been a home dog 28 times. Grant, they have won seven of those games. 25% home dog win percentage. That is eighth in the Big 12.
Okay. So is that better or worse than the West Virginia Mountaineers, who are 19-10? At home and 9-17 on the road over the last 5 years. They've also played some neutral site games, which I did not include.
Okay, the mystique of West Virginia basketball, I think, kind of clouds a little bit their home field advantage in football. It is very annoying to play there in football, though. I'll say the travel, and I think you'll talk about that later, probably influences a lot of that. I can't imagine, knowing what I know about West Virginia, that their facilities are very good. I think that's fair to say. Is that unfair to say?
That seems insulting. I think the facilities are fine.
Okay, that's fine. Rich Rod left because of the facilities. I'm just saying, I don't know where they're at.
Well, that was 2006.
But specifically like the opponent facilities. I mean, like the disparity between home locker room and away locker room is probably pretty big at West Virginia. 3.48 point differential at home. Negative 5.09 point differential on the road. That's 8.57, fourth in the Big 12. And as a home dog, they've been a home dog 20 times. They've only won six of them. That puts them at 30%, right in between Texas and Baylor. So better than Texas Tech.
Gotcha. They also won on the road at Texas, if you remember the Will Grier game. Okay. So we have the home and away statistics. We'll speed through this a little bit, but Parker and I had a great idea. Two things. One, airport rankings, which Parker, you're a well-traveled man. You've been to airports around the country.
I don't want to brag, but I've been to more than four airports. So
how many states have you been to? Like guesstimate off the top of your head.
Would it define been to? Like spent significant time in?
If yeah. Okay. I'm not going to, our listeners aren't not
I counted this. I think I'm in the 20s.
Okay.
Which is annoying because I was in Maine for so long and I didn't go to like Vermont or
Yeah.
I went to New Hampshire, but I didn't go to Vermont. I was like, damn it, that's the only time I was probably gonna get up there. So
yeah. I think I'm around 12, but I think I've flown through probably 20.
The way I counted is has my dog pooped in that state?
Oh, well I think it should be have you pooped in that state? I can't believe Dave Campbell's hired us. Okay. So
hired is such a big word for the record. Dave Campbell loosely condones the fact that we have a podcast. That's about all we can say.
Has not yet disavowed this podcast. I have airport rankings for every Big 12 school. Are you ready?
I will say to the listener, I've done zero prep on this, but I will off the cuff have strong opinions.
That's fine. Just have reactions is all I ask.
Yeah.
This will get to a point where we talk about travel for Big 12 schools and the like how time zones affect football. But as a amuse-bouche, because I speak French.
Mouth teaser.
I know that's what that means, and it's so disturbing that that's what that means. The number one airport in the Big 12 is Orlando, UCF. That is bad because there were people going to Disney, and there were so many children in that airport.
Okay, counterpoint, Orlando Airport. You can get a beer anywhere and open it and just walk wherever you want. At least time I was in the Orlando airport.
Yes. And if we added Tulane, we could do that too. But unfortunately.
But yeah, it was pretty shitty.
Yeah. Really bad. Number two is DFW/Love Field. So I included Baylor in that, right? So TCU.
Wait, are you ranking? Hold on, sorry.
I used Forbes magazine. I did some daggum research. I went to JD.
Orlando was first. Or Orlando was second to last.
Orlando was first.
Oh, I disagree with that. I don't think the
Orlando. Okay, that's fine if you disagree. I used the JD. I did actual research. This is the most research I've done on this podcast.
Okay, Terminal D at the DFW airport is better than almost any airport in America.
Okay, well, take it up with JD Power and Associates. Two is DFW. A
monopoly on the rating.
Slash Love. TC Baylor.
Would you rather fly out of DFW or DFW or Love? All else equal.
DFW is better food options, and I normally fly Southwest, but I'd probably do DFW.
I like the little tram. It's nice.
It is. Number three is Salt Lake City, which I call BS on, because if you've ever flown into Salt Lake City, that's of course for BYU. You have to walk conservatively a mile and a half to get to baggage claim.
Every gate, there is no gate B2 at Salt Lake City. They're all like B140. Uh-huh.
And then you go under and you walk. You walk underground for a mile. Yeah. And then you walk a further quarter mile and then you get to baggage claim.
It is absurd. If you're connecting in Salt Lake, you're missing your flight every time because you fly into like gate B900 and then you have to get to B2 in 13 minutes. It is absurd.
Thank God Colorado didn't come back to the Big 12 because Denver's worse. But
Denver has like the moving things. Airport is like a bunch of like tents. It's like tents out in the. It's terrible. It's awful. I hate it.
Going from JD Power and Associates. Number four is Houston, Hobby and Bush. I will tell you, Terminal E in Houston has a Papados. And it's been refurbished. It's very nice. The parking's bad. Hobby, the parking is terrible, but
it's just overwhelming. There's so many people there at one time. I don't like that at all. But they do have those new machines where you don't have to take your laptop out of your bag. That is the height of luxury.
That's very nice. Five is Austin. I've never flown out of Austin Bergstrom. I assume people
have. I flew into it and out of it. It was not memorable. It was just kind of an airport. It was just a place.
It was an airport. Six is Cincinnati. I've flown into Columbus, but not Cincinnati. So
two different. Hey, me too.
Yeah. And then the worst was Kansas City for KU and Kansas State. And I have heard that multiple times, that it's the worst airport in America.
Yeah, it's small and it's dingy and it's way out of town and it's hard to get to.
9/11 and it's really bad.
And they don't have any flights to like direct. So like Kansas City, it's like I've got to go to Minneapolis or Chicago or somewhere else like Dallas to get anywhere too. So you got to connect doubly. It's like a little regional airport. It's not great.
So not ranked were Des Moines for Iowa State. Lubbock for Texas Tech. I've flown to Amarillo, but never Lubbock.
Shout out to the Des Moines airport for one time. I went there and I lost my debit card. I was at a wedding and just left it at a bar. And a girl at the Dunkin' Donuts or whatever it was gave me a free coffee because I like ordered it and then was like, I actually don't have a card. And so I appreciate the Des Moines airport, but yeah, it's not great.
All right. Well, politeness at least. Parker, trivia question. Okay. What? Who is the Oklahoma City airport named after?
Reining in a couple answers.
It's not Garth Brooks.
Don Williams.
Will Rogers.
Interesting.
Yeah. But was not ranked from JD Power and Associates. And
people have many homes. Yeah.
Well, he's from, I mean, anyway. And then the West Virginia airport in Charleston was also not ranked, but named after Chuck Yeager, the first man to break the sound barrier. So.
Oh, not Chuck Yeager, the inventor of Jägermeister.
Different spelling.
Okay.
All right. So I have a couple stats here, and you feel free to break in. The longest flight possible in the Big 12. It's from Orlando to Salt Lake City at 4.5 hours. And you're crossing two time zones.
Did you look at, do they have a direct flight?
So no, I assumed everybody chartered. Because I assumed somebody in the Big 12 has enough money to charter a flight.
I'm gonna look at this just to see if there are
fan perspective. Yeah.
Directions?
So while you're doing that, here's what we'll do. You look that up and I'll give you the longest flight for each team in 2023 based on if you chartered a flight, how quick would it be? So Baylor is 2 hours and 35 minutes to UCF. That's their longest flight. BYU is 4 hours to West Virginia, crossing two time zones. That's the longest flight this season. Is Baylor at Western? No, sorry, by 5 minutes. Cincinnati to BYU is crossing two time zones and is 5 minutes longer. UCF has to go 2 hours and 40 minutes twice to KU and Kansas State, assuming they fly into the Kansas City airport. Houston is 2:15 to UCF. Iowa State is 2:30 to BYU. KU and Kansas State, assuming again you fly out of the KC airport, I don't get paid enough to do the research to fly to price a flight from Lawrence to Austin. Oklahoma is 2:40 to BYU. Oklahoma State is 2:35 to UCF. TCU is 1:50 to Iowa State. Texas is 2:10 to Iowa State. Texas Tech is 3 hours to West Virginia. Put a pin in that because I have a thought on it. And West Virginia is 2 hours and 30 minutes to TCU and Baylor. They have to do that twice. Fly to DFW.
Oof.
Not great.
That's rough. Wait, what was the pin in West Virginia to Lubbock?
So here's the deal. Do you think, and I propose this to some people that are actually active in college football media, unlike us, do you think anyone has ever chartered a flight from Lubbock to Morgantown that was not related to a collegiate athletic event?
My guess would be a politician. like somebody doing a presidential tour, and for whatever reason they like were going to red states and they went from Lubbock to
Charleston. Don't think
that, feels like the one.
I don't think it's ever happened.
Interesting.
Sincerely. Like I don't think, if you're an aviation expert, please weigh in. I don't think a flight has ever gone from Lubbock to Morgantown until about 2013.
Or that whatever didn't explicitly involve sports.
The first year that that Tech joined the Big 12.
Yeah.
I don't think a flight's ever done that route.
Yeah.
And if you're a pilot, please weigh in.
I'd agree on that. It's a very unlikely combination.
Did you price a Orlando to Salt Lake City flight?
You got to go through Dallas. Yeah. So there's not a, not a direct.
How do you get to like Disney World then?
You fly to Dallas and you go to Orlando.
Well, two cities.
I mean, it's a connecting flight. It's not like the end of the, it's not like the end of the world. It's just, you just connect. Yeah.
That's,
or you go to Atlanta and you go to Orlando. No, yeah.
If you find Delta. Parker, this has been the Purple Theory Podcast. We are so excited to join the Dave Campbell's Network. We have a lot of content down the pipe coming your way. We have a couple guests that we're hoping to get on that we will have good conversations with. But until then, my name is Grant McGalliard. You can find me on Twitter at Grant McGalliard, spelled like it sounds with all those vowels. He's at Parker Fleming. He's at Stats of War. He has done so much doggone work with Sumer Sports. Parker, tell him about that work.
Yeah, so you guys should definitely tune in to the draft show next week. I will tweet out links to it. I'll be on it for a little bit. I can confidently say, one, we've done a lot of work and it's going to be sweet. I think I'll be able to tweet out one of the graphics earlier next week and just be like, hey, we're going to have some cool stuff on here. But I can also very confidently say no other draft, NFL draft thing that you're going to look at or watch or consume is going to have a guy who was like a GM until 2020 talking about, like, literally Thomas Dimitroff, the general manager of the Falcons, is going to talk about drafting in the NFL draft. So tune in for that alone. And because if it gets a lot of numbers, I'll probably get a bonus. So that would be tight. But I think it'll be cool and beneficial for all of you and kind of a nice alternative to the talking heads of, hey, this guy, you know, whatever the agents tell the people to say on that, we will have a little bit more perspective and some good stats and some good graphics. So tune into that. Cause that'll be a lot of fun, for sure.
We should also plug too. We may have done this at the beginning of the pod, but I will repeat it. You were on the Solid Verbal Podcast with, Dan Rubenstein and the rest of the fellows.
Yeah. So, yeah. Did kind of like a year one thing about TCU and Sonny Dykes. And I actually appreciated the space to talk about what they were going to do in the future and why you know, might be cautious or might be optimistic. So yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. So check that out as well. We will be back next week. And again,
doing something.
Very glad to be part of the Dave Campbell's Network. Hopefully my name will appear in the magazine. It won't, but that's fine. Until then,
not with that attitude, it won't.
Not with that attitude. Until then, y'all be good, and yeah, we'll see you next week. And again,
doing something.
Very glad to be part of the Dave Campbell's Network. Hopefully my name will appear in the magazine. It won't, but that's fine. Until then,
not with that attitude, it won't.
Not with that attitude. Until then, y'all be good, and yeah, we'll see you next week.